what's going on in Gaza. It's not just isolated in one place.
I misspoke. I said 1,000 arrested. Yeah. 10,000 yeah. Palestinians have been arrested, most held without charge. A number of reports from many different groups have said people are being tortured, people are being killed, people are being raped in jails. Daniel Levy, what you think Israel wants to accomplish there before the end of this? Do you see them annexing the West Bank?
De facto, we are very deep into that process. The Israeli government is making good on its own coalition guidelines. And let me remind you what those guidelines say. The Jewish people have an exclusive and inalienable right to all parts of the land of Israel. That was set out long before October 7th. It was a government with those guidelines that the Biden administration handed entry to the visa waiver program, tried to get normalization with Saudi Arabia. So that was the way that Biden backed the axis of Israeli extremism. And we now see it coming to fruition. And it's not coincidental that there is a scorched earth policy in the West Bank, because the intentionality here is to either force Palestinians out or make life there so miserable and make this a kind of humanitarian aid basket case for years and decades to come, that we don't talk politics. We focus on, can we get this assistance in, that assistance in, or both? That is what is going on. That is what we need to keep our eyes on. And this is the permissive environment that the U.S. has created, and it backs the settler extremism, which is backed by the state.
Daniel Levy, former Israeli peace negotiator, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, and Amjad Araki, Palestinian journalist, senior editor at 972 magazine. We'll link to your piece at Chatham House. The real schism in the Israel-Hamas ceasefire talks is about who decides Gaza's future. And your pieces in 972 magazine, the most recent, we're already in a regional war. Only a Gaza ceasefire can end it. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Rise and shine, because it's time to wake up the neighborhood here at KBOO. When you help support KBOO now between September 21st, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $11,000. Just go to kboo.fm/give and become a member of grassroots community radio that you've grown to know.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO host will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
Good morning, good morning, good morning to you. Hey, this is More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. Yes, the birds are chirping, the sun is shining, and KBOO is bringing you exciting community radio 24/7. Help wake up the neighborhood by becoming a member today. Hey, why don't you check out kboo.fm/give to donate and get your contribution matched dollar for dollar, up to $11,000, to double your impact on our airwaves and support your favorite radio station and programs. Thank you all for all that you do and for continuing to keep this, your community radio station, on the air. We appreciate it. Your neighbors appreciate it. So let's continue to wake up the neighborhood. And on this day, September 16th, we are waking up the neighborhood and waking up our community. So much is happening. So much has happened this past weekend. I am grateful for all of you for spending a little time this morning, your busy week, with us. Our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Give us a call in a few minutes to check in, to check in with your community and make sure that all is well. There is so much that is happening. So much has happened. And I just want to remind all of us of our various responsibilities. So in addition to becoming, renewing your membership here on KBOO, you are probably well aware that there is so much going on in our communities. And let's have an opportunity this morning to speak about what are some of the challenges we face and some of the things that are going forth in our community. Well, since our last program, we certainly witnessed the presidential debate last week. We shared about some of our concerns, some of the thoughts leading into the presidential debate, and you shared so many good thoughts about what should be said, the issues that should be addressed. And so, following that debate, and it's been like 6 or 7 days and, you know, 4 or 5 news cycles since then, so you may not recall it. And maybe it's good. You might recall your immediate reaction following the debate, and now, or, you know, 6 days later, things have settled. And what are things? Have your mind changed? Have things altered for you during the last week since the debate? And what do you think of the candidates' emphases and the things that they thought that it was important to address? What are some of those things that you thought coming from the debate? So I'm interested in hearing some of your general thoughts. And certainly this is not only a national election, but there are elections in communities throughout the nation. So there are local elections that are so important, local elections that will impact your immediate life. You will not only elect officials for local government, but also for federal offices such as congressional representatives and senator who will represent us in the Senate. So there are lots of things that are happening, and things are important. So not only the presidential candidates, but have you also thought about your local candidates, some of the issues in your local communities that they are addressing? And let me suggest to you, those of you who enjoy your community radio station, you might have heard the spot before we came on the air, reminding us of the opportunity for all of us to continue to listen on community radio station and listen to what's happening. So there is local elections that daily that I'm running on air. Go to KBOFM/program/running air, and you will get a programs of daily roundups for KBOO city council candidates in your districts. They are frequent. The next live programming will take place on Tuesday, tomorrow at 10 a.m., and then again on Thursday at 9, and on Friday at 7. And it's an opportunity for the local candidates, Portland City Council candidates, to share, to have the opportunity to get their message out to the voters, you, we, all of us, the voters. So look on to that. Listen live or listen to the podcast is a way to get informed. And also remember to pay your traffic violation and your parking parking violations. I noticed a couple of candidates for mayor of all things, of city council, have not been too attentive to pay their parking violations and to go to court and to do those things. So that's neither here nor there. Well, it is here or there. One of the local police unions, I think, disendorsed, returned their endorsement from one of the candidates because of their violations. But that was some concern for them. I also want to talk about parenting. And I came across an article in the New York Times last week that I want to talk about the stress on parenting and have your input on the insights of the writers of this article. How are you impacted by parenting? Either you raising children now or looking at your family members, your children raising children, your neighbors raising children. What are the pressures and the concerns? And are parents being burned out? I'll share a little bit more about that. But first, let's go to a caller who has called. And good morning, Janet. How are you?
Well, I'm kind of hanging in there. And I think the topic you have is compelling. And I wanted to weigh in a little bit if I'm often too random and then to kind of put the brakes on it just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because things have gotten people super rattled up. As far as parenting goes, the most astounding thing is over the last 2 days, I've become a great, great grandmother.
Ah, congratulations.
And I start to be thinking about, different things. I think about my mother had a tough time during the when the war started, and my grandmother and grandfather in the Lower East Side were the ones who took care of me and came over as immigrants. And mm-hmm. I'm thinking that there's so much very profoundly complicated things that are going on that for me to kind of try to say, well, what's the thread, Janet? For me, I kind of be thinking about that book written by Nietzsche, The Genealogy of Morals.
The Genealogy of Morals, yes.
To be actually recognizing the fact that what is the moral standard that we have today, he thinks, comes from the Judeo-Christian thing, which is not necessarily... And more than the fact that what kind of really got me kind of shaken to the core a lot lately is the Pope coming out saying that we need to choose the lesser of two evils. And it was kind of weird, but my background has been such in parenting, haven't always done everything correctly, but hopefully always coming from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching, had a lot of different very bizarre, interesting, very extensively complicated teaching positions. And then I was the principal of this school for adolescent sex offenders. And I remember on Thanksgiving, I would give certain assignments about what we're thankful for. What are we thankful for in nature and then in our experiences. And the one fellow said he was thankful that he knew right from wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking, recognizing from my practice being kind of a Jew with an Orthodox Jewish background, not Zionist at all, but very humanitarian, about recognizing how important is the way we care for each other in an altruistic way.
Yes.
Recognize the connectedness of all life, the connectedness of all people, and have impartial, unconditional regard, respect, and this is like a...
That sounds like a good point, what you're making in terms of recognizing how we are connected towards one another. And I think your experience in terms of with schools recognize that, how important it is. And when you finish, I want to share a little bit from this article, and it's reflecting on the Surgeon General who recently issued a recent advisory on parents' mental health. So we're all impacted by these things.
Well, yeah, I really appreciate you letting me express myself, and that I really want young people to think for themselves. Mm-hmm. And as we go into the school year, that we respect this country was built on free speech and all that kind of stuff. I think it's very pertinent right at this moment that we have on guard what is to cover our bases about why this country was founded on.
Yes.
Not on hate speech or just having the 1% get what the heck they want. So
okay.
Thank you so much, Yisrael.
Hey, thank you so much, Nana, and thank you for being you. Thank you for calling in.
Say congratulations on having a
great grandchild. Right.
His name means who speaks. He speaks the truth.
Oh, right.
Right on. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And that's was Janet, who just shared the news that she recently became a great grandparent, and this is related to the Surgeon General recent advisory on parent mental health. I'll read a little bit from Claire Kane Miller article about parenting and some of the issues facing parents in the United States these days. But let's go to our next caller, who I think is a parent. Let's go to Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. And yes, I am a parent.
Okay.
Yeah, just to speak on parenting a bit, you know, as a not only am I a parent to a 6-year-old, I also work full time. I play music, and I'm in a household where I'm essentially the only real able-bodied person, because my mother-in-law is having some health issues right now, and my partner is a recent amputee, so still recovering. So, you know, just learning how to manage stress and burnout. And, I've done a lot of that through just really delving into, meditation and, Buddhism has really helped me in that way in, alleviating a lot of the stress. It's kind of like a spiritual, it's almost kind of a spiritual other side of the coin for my, for my political views, in a way. You understanding relationships over characteristics. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not being hung up on forms and how things appear, but how things relate to one another. Uh-huh. You know, I think a lot of people could really benefit from that kind of analysis. Yes. You know, because right now in our political climate, you know, we're stuck on characteristics, we're stuck on how things appear, but we're not encouraged to see how things relate to one another. Mm-hmm. You know, I just recently watched the Breakfast Club, where they interviewed Jill Stein and her running mate.
Oh,
and, while I don't agree with all of what Jill Stein stands for, I'm not a Green Party member. I don't, their platform is nice, but it's not my thing.
Right.
You know, she talked about how that her running mate talked about how fascism and imperialism are two sides of the same coin. Fascism faces inward and imperialism faces outward.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we have a choice between a white fascist and an intersectional imperialist. And you know, and it's not really much of a choice, because we can, you can't vote out fascism, and you really can't vote out imperialism. But, like, you know, shutting down Donald Trump without addressing imperialism will just kind of keep imperialism at bay. We'll keep fascism at bay for only a certain amount of time, but imperialism, as Jeremiah Wright would say, the imperialist chickens always come home to roost. And, you know, Donald Trump is part of that. 9/11 was a part of that. You know, it's just, it's American foreign policy turned inward.
All right. But
and,
then,
you know,
let
go
me,
ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I appreciate your analysis of politics, and I was wondering how it may impact in terms of local races, your analysis in terms of fascism and how it impacts local races, or does it?
Well, it does, because, I mean, at the end of the day, local politics, while having a more direct effect, obviously, you know, we talk about how, like, candidates are bought and sold on the market. You know, it's liberalism, you know, essentially says that the market solves everything. So politicians, rather than becoming, like, voices for the people, essentially become goods to be bought and sold and traded on the market. And so if you're looking at it that way, local elections are a market that has a lower buy-in value. So we're dealing with that right now. I'm a part of the musicians union, and right now we're working with Music Portland, because the Prosper Portland is spearheading a campaign to bring a music venue that is owned by the guys who own Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster, they're trying to bring, anyway, I can't remember I'm drawing a blank on the name, but they're trying to bring
Live Nation. Yeah.
Live Nation. Yeah, they're trying to bring in a Live Nation venue.
Yes.
And Prosper Portland, which Rene Gonzalez works with, you know, they're spearheading this campaign to bring in this venue. And it really isn't the idea of having a larger venue that's the problem. It's the fact that when Live Nation comes in, they might hire some folks from inside the community, but ultimately the decisions and the way the business is ran will essentially, like, start pulling bricks out of the community to build up their own establishment.
All right. So what are some of the things that the musician union is doing in terms of resisting this push?
Well, I mean, what I'm a part of, you know, is more, what I'm part of is kind of like a subcommittee, and essentially we're helping. Music Portland is already kind of spearheading this, so we're just providing extra support.
Yes.
But, I mean, all we're doing is just doing our best to raise awareness about it and, you know, asking people to tell stories about being a musician in this town and how this would affect you personally, and just, you know, and I've told my story.
Sure.
So,
yes.
I mean, you know, it's understanding that, you know, Democrats and Republicans, because, you know, Prosper Portland also works with Portland Metro Chamber, which used to be called the Portland Business Alliance, which is a group of moneyed interests that are out here trying to clean up the streets by investing in police and essentially throwing away houseless folks, you know, or sweeping them away. And, you know, that's not only Rene Gonzalez, but that's also Tina Kotek, you know, our current governor. She's working with Portland Metro Chamber in that way. And, you know, Republicans and Democrats are essentially resigning themselves to how this system currently works. And you have people who in this current system have benefited from the radical and revolutionary movements of the 60s, 70s, and even 80s, you know, talking about black folks, brown folks, queer folks, trans folks, you know, all people who have benefited from direct revolutionary action who are now capitulating to the system in order to preserve what rights they think we have. I mean, we just saw with President Trump how he's talking about how the Haitians are eating all the cats, but it wasn't a Haitian, it was a black lady. And I always tell, you know, I tell black and brown folks, we're citizens, but we're only citizens on paper. Yeah. You know, we're not, as soon as something happens and they need a bad guy, they're going to throw us under the bus first, because their ultimate goal is to preserve power, not people. And that's why we got to understand that the Democrats never gave us power, and the Republicans never gave us power. It was our revolutionary brothers and sisters who called us to organize in the streets and directly confront the state and its violence against us that ultimately created enough pushback to the, to force the hand in the direction of the people.
Oh, you know, so Martin Luther. Right, right. So power. They don't concede power. We have to.
Power concedes nothing without a demand.
Yeah.
And right now we're not demanding.
Yeah.
You know, even with Kamala Harris not demanding, Kamala Harris is skating on vibes right now,
mm-hmm.
and people and a lot of liberals are so afraid of what Trump can do that they're not seeing. They're so afraid of fascism that they're not paying attention to intersectional imperialism.
Right. Hey, well, thank you, Santiago, for this wide-ranging, I was going to say interview, but I guess it's an interview, but it's certainly from talking about politics to talking about local and national politics and talking about challenges of parenting these days. I appreciate your thoughts and your wisdom.
No problem, Cecil. Have a good day, brother.
Thank you. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we welcome your calls on 503-231-8187. We heard from Santiago, who shared some information about what it is to be a parent, and also about local and national politics. What are the challenges, what it is that it is possible to do, and where we are going as a community. Before Santiago, Janet called, and she shared some wisdom from her experience on working with adolescents and working with students. I will get to this article by that was in the New York Times, and where is it? By Claire, what's her name? Excuse me, I'm so sorry. Claire Kane Miller was published on September 14th. But first, let's go to our caller, next caller. Robbie, good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm having a good morning listening to the show. I had Francis talking about that wonderful stuff. Congratulations on being a great-great-grandmother. And, Pope Francis, I wanted to say, he said that, I just wanted to quote it because I thought it was very interesting. He said that both candidates are against life. Mm-hmm. One kills babies and one's against immigrants. And I just think that's a very true statement. But I did want to get into, and Santiago talking about the imperial side of it, of the political apparatus we have. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is how much money Harris has taken from the defense contractors. It's actually $1.36 million compared to Trump's $800,000. And so there's a lot of stuff to be looked at underneath, you know, the optics and the personalities. There's a really funny scene, and if you want to talk about something, you know, feel free to cut me off.
Okay, no, continue.
At some point.
No, continues. Hello?
So there's a part in Back to the Future, this old movie with Christopher Lloyd, and when he goes back to the 50s, he shows him a video camera, a recorder, and you know, it's like a handheld digital, you know, recorder from the late 80s, early 90s, or whatever.
Right.
It was.
Yes.
And Christopher Lloyd gets a look at it, because earlier on, Christopher Lloyd's like, well, you're from the future, who's the president? And Marty goes, Ronald Reagan. And he's like, the movie star? He's like, why would that, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And so then when he sees the recorder, he's going, no wonder it's a movie star, that's the president.
Right.
And what we have is reality television, which is funneling us into control.
Yeah.
And it's a very scary time because, you know, people are pointing out, you know, obviously, you know, Trump. But, you know, it's funny because I guess when you pay too much attention to politics, you can remember when Donald Trump was a Democrat who endorsed Hillary Clinton. There's a video of him almost saying he would endorse her to run. He's a good friend of hers. I mean, and it's just when you look at it through that length, you know, I'll say this second assassination attempt on Trump, I believe this one. I think they reacted like they did. That they didn't do the first time, but I think they reacted as if it was a very real scenario. They put him into a secret place. There was like absolutely no coverage of it. You know, that was a real one compared to the first one, which okay. was a staged event, as far as I can tell. But the you know, I know I'm making a lot of statements okay. here, but
yeah, we try to focus because there's a couple of callers behind you, but continue.
I'll wrap it up. I appreciate mm-hmm. the conversation. I just think that the moment we can get beyond this reality television, which is making us feel emotions, because I remember before it got to this moment with Trump that it's now become so emotional you can't even really talk about it. But I think that's where we really need to identify the class war and not this culture war that they're using to perpetuate nothing transcribing in far out politics in our politics, you know. I mean, how far can the right, can the Democrats shift? Is my question. But anyway, thank you for the conversation very much.
Hey, thank you so much. And your conversation reminded me, it's certainly that the Democratic nominee is very much a mainstream Democrat. I think I might have stated last week that she seems to remind me more of the classic Cold War Democrat, sort of like those of you who are older from the Pacific Northwest might remember Scoop Jackson, very much in line with Kennedy Johnson sort of Cold War type mentality in terms of, as the last caller suggested, her dependence on the defense industry. So thank you so much. And let's go to Lou, I believe.
Correct.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning, Lou.
Hey. So as an elder or older person demographically, when I won a high school speech contest, we got a free trip to Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So I actually got to shake hands with Scoop Jackson and with George McGovern. So we had both sides covered.
Okay. Wow.
So I was calling about local elections. Portland mm-hmm. Grey Panthers has, as mentioned before, held candidate forums probably with 80 of the candidates that have talked and are running mm-hmm. of the 120 or so.
Wow.
And one of the things we made was a chart of, can you hear me okay? It sounds like it's echoing.
No, it's sort of, we can hear you. Continue.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. A chart comparing which groups, there's three main quote-unquote influencer groups profiled in the Oregonian. And so we're comparing who's endorsed who in different specific districts, mm-hmm. Since there's so many candidates running. So, for example, Panthers in District 4, like Lisa Freeman, Sarah Silkey, Mitch Green, somewhat similar to what People for Portland for All supports for those candidates. That's the downtown district. And then, in contrast, United for Portland, which tends to be real estate folks, they support Eli Arnold, Policeman, Olivia Clark, Stan Pinkin, Bob Weinstein, Eric Zimmerman, etc. Mm-hmm. So this chart has fairly clear-cut distinctions between who supports who and where people are at locally. And
great.
Another example...
And you're going to give us the website where we can look at this?
Yeah, I can. Okay, I thought I just kind of mentioned
yeah,
sort of the
continue.
Outlines.
Mm-hmm.
The City Council District 3, which tends to be Southeast... Panthers and supports Angelita Murillo, Tiffany Lane, Chris Flannery, and United for Portland has, in that one, it's really interesting, completely opposite people. Jesse Cornett, is something that United for Portland's endorsed. Dan DeMillo, Rex Burkholder, and Steve Novick. So they might actually fit maybe what you were just talking about historically about mainstream Democrats, possibly. Mm-hmm. So if people do want more information, there's a couple other things I was going to try to mention, but
yes,
you might
please.
Have other callers. No. The information, there's a Facebook page that Panthers have, and we have this chart we can send to people where they can look at it on the Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So if people just look at Portland Gray, G-R-A-Y, Panthers on Facebook, that's one way to find that. So did you have a question about the mainstream? Like you were saying, it sounds like a couple callers talked about, is there no difference that's important in voting nationally between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, or that's kind of an important question?
Oh no, I wasn't saying that. I think there are distinctions. It was just an observation that the vice president is very much of a mainstream Democrat. She's not, you know, progressive liberal Bernie Sanders type, and that
or
was just,
AOC or Elizabeth Warren. However. One of the things that Panthers has been able to do this cycle is get an op-ed printed in the Tribune, and it was their headline. We didn't even write the headline. It was saying voting third party is like a gift to Donald Trump. So in this particular election, one can argue it's a binary choice between Trump and fascism, and Kamala Harris would be the first woman president in the history of the country, 250 years. And she's not Sarah Palin, so that seems helpful, I would argue, among many other things that are there's strict, very much important differences that affect people. The other thing I was going to try to mention was for city council local elections, which tend to get ignored to a large extent, in District 2, which is tends to be North Portland, Portland Gray Panthers supports Michelle DePass, a school board member, Alana Pirtle-Ginney, who managed the M114 gun reform campaign, Jennifer Park, Money Glickman, Debbie Kitchen, Nat West. And that one's kind of interesting because United for Portland, which tends to be the real estate folks, pretty opposite supports in this chart who they support. Dan Ryan, Mariah Hudson, Mike Marshall, Tiffany Penson, etc. The last one I was going to try to mention was this is District 1, which is East County, the least represented district historically. Panthers supporting Steph Routh, Candace Avalos, Cale Turn, a David Douglas school board member. And again, a pretty strict opposition from People for Portland, the so-called name for the United for Portland folks. They support Loretta Smith, Terrence Hayes, Noah Ernst. So it's when we talk to undergrads at Portland State, they're very much following Kamala versus Trump, but not necessarily local elections. And the one that we found that, and KBOO other programs may be covering this well, is the county commission races. Shannon Singleton is running against Sam Adams, a former mayor, for one of the open county commission slots. And Megan Moyer, M-O-Y-E-R, is running against Vadim Mazursky for one of the other open county commission spots. And Vadim Mazursky is kind of in the same section, gang group, as Rene Gonzalez, who's running for mayor, and Nathan Vasquez, who just defeated Mike Schmidt for district attorney. So we've found the local elections to be important and really interesting in terms of the demarcations. So I don't know if you have any thoughts in general about local elections, how closely you've been following, Cecil?
I have been, but as you just, you know, in this 5 minutes, there's
right.
so much to digest, and I appreciate groups like Gray Panthers who are serving a real purpose by outlining the candidates and their positions, and this is very informative.
And KBOO has been helping too, I believe,
yes.
in terms of with ranked choice voting and 120 candidates overall, not having people just like throw darts at a dartboard, but to try to do a little information seeking and research a bit
yes.
about the demarcations between the sides. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, thank you so much. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. Lou just shared some thoughts from Portland Gray Panthers on the work they're doing in terms of political education for local and national elections. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187, and I will get to the article on Portland, not on Portland, but on parenting. But first, let's go to our next caller. Elliot. Good morning, Elliot, and thank you for waiting.
Yes. I want to make a point that's sort of the logical antithesis of what Santiago said. And I believe, Cecil, since I arrived a decade ago from New York into Portland, I believe you're a black pastor. And I want to riff off of another black pastor, Reverend Barber, of the Poor People's Campaign, who's written a book on working class whites. In the early 1960s, marginalized groups like transsexuals or illegal migrants had almost no civil rights. Now, today, they have at least a modicum of some civil rights. And in order to get economic reform in this country, you know, you have to elect to Congress some kind of progressive supermajority. But I feel that, you know, a typical working-class white voting for Trump sees that his job, his well-paying past job, might have been sent to China, and he doesn't have the proverbial pot to pee in. And he might have a nephew whose job that the nephew wanted might have been sent to Mexico, and the nephew might be drug addicted. And then very woke, in the bad sense, activists on community radio might say, well, those working class whites have to pay reparations to all of the oppressed minority groups who aren't as nearly as oppressed as they were in the 1950s. And this is just not going to fly as a strategy of political reform.
So what
and
is
it
your
even affects community radio, because very few young people under age 40 are listening to community radio or participating in it because, you know, community radio has not modernized its media strategies, and the young people who can't save anything and can't afford to buy a house or have children are alienated. What do you think of that?
You mentioned a lot of things. I think you are correct in terms of your observation in terms of people, their access to different media sources and where different generations get information. I think that's important. And you raise a lot of good points. Hey, thank you, Elliot, so much for sharing this morning. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. We've been talking about elections, local and national elections, and the impact on our communities. What are things that are important for you? Some of our callers have shared their observations on the candidates and where they are. We began our conversation this morning not only talking about elections, but also talking about the challenges that parents are facing these days. And I want to get to an article that I mentioned a few times that was in the New York Times, which was a reflection on a report that the Surgeon General recently issued about the challenges that parents are now facing. So I'll just read a little bit from this article. Also invite you to give us a call. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. The article is by Claire Kane Miller, who wrote in New York Times September 14th. The title of the article is Today's Parents, Exhausted, Burned Out, and Perpetually Behind. And I'll just read a few excerpts before we go to our next caller. She writes, today's parents are burned out. It's because today's parents face something different and more demanding. The expectation that they spend even more time and money educating and enriching their children. These pressures, researchers say, are driven in part by fears about the modern day economy, that if parents don't equip their children with every possible advantage, their children could fail to achieve a secure middle class life. Intensive parenting. In recent years, the pressure has grown worse, said Professor Milky and Nomaguchi, who wrote a review of scholarship on the intensity and stress of parenting since 2010. Parents feel they need to make up for what their children lost during the pandemic. Social media has made comparison with other parents inescapable. Technological change has made it harder to prepare children for future work. Americans have less faith than the political system can Americans have less faith that the political system can address families' problems. The article continues, unlike other rich countries, the United States has few universal federal family policies, like paid leave or child care subsidies. During the women's movement of the 1970s, the country considered the idea that government and employer policies could help parents work and care for their families, as Kirsten Swift, a history professor at Fordham, has written. But the Reagan era ushered in a different idea that the government should not interfere in parent and family life. The article continued, conservatives still generally prefer that instead of taxpayer-funded government programs, people in family communities, relatives, neighbors, church members, mostly fill the gap. I'm pausing. Think of J.D. Vance and what he said recently. Okay, continuing with the article. They write, but there has been a decline in the informal community network helping to raise children. Attendance at community meetings, places like churches, has decreased. Mothers are likely to work for pay rather than to be home keeping an eye on children, their own and their neighbors. Parents with higher education are more likely to move far away from move far away from grandparents to pursue careers. So where are we? We must reimagine how we are in parenting. I'll continue this, but let's first go to our caller who has been waiting, who may want to talk about parenting or something else. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good morning, Cecil. Thanks for your passion, your truth-telling. I'm very concerned, very worried about the far right movement and the fact that the far right hasn't been unmasked. There's an article I hope people will look at. It was published in The Atlantic in November of 2023 on Peter Thiel.
Oh, yes.
He's one of the leaders in the Silicon Valley right wing, and he is opposed to democracy. He feels democracy is incapable, is outmoded, and must give way to dictatorship. His libertarianism has curdled into a nihilism ready to destroy everything.
Yes.
I think it's very important to read this article and to know about Peter Thiel. He is the main funder of Vance, the vice president candidate.
Yes.
And he embodies a cynicism that is a very real threat. I'm a German translator, so I'm more sensitive to authoritarianism. I'm totally shocked at how people can be indifferent. Well, I read an article.
I'm going to ask you a question so you can expand a little bit more on this in terms of this. Thank you for pointing out this article on Peter Thiel, and also the movement, which had been has become mainstream. So, yes. And very much so. So, in terms of the influence, and especially looking at the influence of this libertarian thinking and the impact on Silicon Valley and its impact on the national politics, and so you see it not only in the national candidates, such as the Republican candidates for president and vice president. So, it's
yes.
very much mainstream. Continue, please.
Well, the right wing is based on resentment. The real disaster is the financial markets, is the way that the governments don't have resources to integrate immigrants, that states and cities, regions have to choose between food and housing assistance. That corporations are not contributing because of tax avoidance and tax havens,
yes.
The stock buybacks, the microsecond betting. You know, stocks are not held for 6 months or 4 years, but rather for 10 seconds.
Right.
The reality of our economy is that we have an economy of indebtedness and enrichment, and then the media, of course, has failed totally to point out the real evils in our. Oh, the Republicans can go on scapegoating and creating a false unity.
Yeah. So, what is your response to this? These Republican talking points and theories. What is the response?
I read an article titled "How Would Plato Look at Trump?" And actually, you know, Plato in his Republic emphasizes the importance of knowledge, skills, and experience. Mm. Now, I don't think Trump has had any experience except in bank and insurance fraud. Now, Plato also emphasizes empathy, commitment, and consistency. So, you know, the Republicans are all bombasts, are all accusations and scapegoating, and they are just encouraging the development of a plutocracy and an oligarchy and cynicism toward democracy.
I think
participation is what's vital.
Right.
You know, involvement and our recognition of a public and a private side.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your vision and how well you explain what we are facing and how we should respond. Thank you, Monk. Have a good day. Thank you so much. And as our last caller just reminds us, we are faced with so much, not only the last caller, but other callers. And it is related to how we care for ourselves and for our community. Let me close by just reading a little bit more from the article in the New York Times about parenting, because it's related to not only national politics, but local politics and how we create community. The author continues towards the end. She said, right, much of parenting conversation in recent years has been about whether intensive parenting hurts or helps children. There are fears that can go too far, depriving children of chances to develop independence and resilience, though child development experts say that children generally benefit from more parental involvement. But the Surgeon General alert shifts the focus to parents' well-being, which is said in turn affects children's mental health. The increased demands of raising children combined with responsibility like paid work and elder care have come at the expense of mental health, leisure time, sleep, and time alone or with a spouse. we're crushing parents on an enormous burden for the benefit of society, and we're sort of free riding on them, Professor Swift said. The advisory calls on policymakers, employers, and healthcare providers to better support parents, including through family policies like paid leave and child tax credits. These are ideas that have starkly been supported by Democrats, though certain Republicans have backed some of them. But Dr. Murtha said that a pro-family America would also require a cultural change, one that envisioned parenting as a societal good, and therefore the responsibility of the whole society as important as paid job. He described parenting as sacred work. This could mean parenting a little less intensively, he suggested. Friends and relatives and after-school programs could help care for children. Parents should make time for themselves, he said, to do activities that bring them joy or improve their health without feeling guilt that they're spending time away from their children. And he said, talking more openly about the demands of parenting could eventually change cultural expectations about whether all this time and money is needed for children to succeed. This says the author of a recent article in the New York Times, Today's Parents, Exhausted, Burned Out, and Perpetually Behind, Claire Kane Miller. This article is related to our discussion this morning about our national politics. What are we doing, our national and local politics, what are we doing to care for one another to make sure that our families, our communities are healthy? What are we doing to make sure that not only children, but parents' mental health are addressed and cared for? There is so much to do in our society, so much we need to work for. As we approach our next election in a month and a half or in a few weeks, we need to begin to address these issues about what do we need to do to build healthier, safer community? How can we care for one another and for our society? The callers this morning from Janet, our first caller, had things to say about being a great grandparent. But let's hear from Frances before we go. Good morning, Frances.
Hi. I have so much to say on this stuff, but I'm going to try to cut it short. First of all, Kamala Harris does have a plan for parents to help them financially. I have raised children in our society. They are mixed race, and I have taught them to be kind and considerate, and I think they have very good critical thinking skills so that they can maneuver in this society. But something I cannot and have not been able to change is the fact that at any point in time, someone that we have given the power and authority to carry a gun around and shoot people could actually confront them, and if they don't have the wisdom to be smarter than that person, they could end up shot to death. And that still exists in our country, and I don't know what. And now we have someone running for president who is using a community, an entire community of Haitian people, as some kind of a political tool. And I am totally disheartened by the fact that our country, our media, allows a person such as that to continue to run for president of this country. And for a man, think of JFK, think of GW, think of any of them. If any of them had posted, "I hate somebody," that's all, just that, they would not be president. And I don't know how this man is allowed to continue. He's stirring up a whole lot of stuff. And now, a recent theory was that the reason that he was, the people are saying that he is trying to take our freedoms. That's why he was the assassination attempt.
No, I don't want to talk about that. I want to go back to what you were saying about former President Trump. My concern is not so much about he or even the vice president. It's that there is a movement. So even if we get beyond the election, if the vice president is elected, we as a nation have to deal with one half of our population. About one half of our population.
Actually, I don't know if it's one half of our population. Our entire population that is allowing this man or anyone who thinks like him to be given a platform at all.
Yeah, but and it's not just this man. We have to deal with our neighbors. We are the people who are enabling this behavior, and there's so much work we have to do. But close, Francis, I'll let you have the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, our neighbors, we find, Republicans, who are very kind, wonderful people, and we just need to have some conversations.
Yes.
Serious conversations about what this is leading to. And I am pleased that there is so much support for Kamala Harris, and I know that she is a compromise, so to speak, but
okay.
A good compromise.
You have the last word. Thank you, Francis. Thank you so much, all of you who have been listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. Stay tuned for more programming. Continue to support us. Wake up your neighborhood and support KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott, and for More Talk Radio, be well.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act.